Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Blogger News on the Radio. My name is Simon Barrett, and I will be your host for the program. Once again, our focus is going to be on the two Florida cases, Kaylee Anthony and Haley Cummings. Joining me in the studio is my wife, Jan. Jan, I'm glad you could tear yourself away to talk to us today.
Thanks for having me, honey.
From Gainesville, Florida, we have ace reporter and the news and programming director for the Sky 97.3, TJ Hart. TJ, how's it going?
Good afternoon, everyone.
I understand that Florida's looking at some weather today.
Yes, there certainly is the threat of severe weather. We've had a lot of watches, but no warnings. And not as bad as what you folks in Mississippi had by a long stretch yesterday. So.
Right. I heard a great description this morning. Someone was asked to describe what this tornado did, and the answer was, well, imagine a mile and a half wide lawnmower going across the county.
Ooh.
I mean, oh, trail of destruction? Oh, yeah. Nasty stuff. Also from Florida, I do believe we might have our ace investigator, William Cobra Storbs, with us. Cobra, are you with us?
Simon, I'm always with you, brother, like a shadow, my friend, like a shadow.
Are you having just the best day of your entire life?
Well, I've got you right now on the regular phone. I'm going to slam you on speaker, mute you out, because I am kind of like doing some prison duty today. I'm taking little rocks out of a flower garden to put bigger rocks in it. So that's, and you can hear, I'm not bullshitting, there's rocks.
There's rocks.
What
okay.
Women won't have you doing, brother? Jesus Christ. TJ, I heard that you had the honeydew list that was overrunning, and they do have dates on the honeydew list, TJ.
I also believe that from Sin City, Nevada, we have none other than the crime doctor himself, author and hopefully soon to be TV star, Denny Griffin. Denny, are you on the line with us?
I'm here. Hello, everybody.
Hello, Denny.
Hi, Denny.
You're not going to let this TV fame go to your head, are you?
No, far from it, Simon.
Actually, Denny, after yesterday's program, Dave Johnson called me, and he said, wow, you know a bunch of interesting people. And I thought that was quite the compliment from a guy with his background, Air America and all. We have a new panelist joining us this week, Peter Hyatt. Peter is an investigator for the state of Maine and a practitioner of the science of statement analysis. Peter, it is great to have you on the program.
It's great to be here. Thank you.
As always, our phone lines are open, and our switchboard number is 646-378-1120. Also, our chat room is open, and you're welcome to ask your questions there. But please understand that we are covering two cases this week. So don't get frustrated and be saying, let's get on to Haley. You have to wait for that to happen. Okay, let's kick off with an update on the Kaylee Anthony case. Last week was either very quiet or very busy, depending on your perspective. Jan, what happened?
Well, they had some more documents released. I believe it was Friday, something like 300 or so pages released. But, of course, I've only had a chance to go over about the first, I think I've got the copy of the 198 of them. But one thing that I did find that was about the hair samples that was found. They claiming that neither one of the hair samples were that of any of the Anthony's at all. And they're claiming there were some reports that saying that, you know, this could hurt their case and give the defense cause for, my mind just went blank,
The
jury to...
Right. It was nothing to do with the Anthony's.
It could make the jury, you know, think, well, maybe there's cause for doubt in it. But I don't understand why that happened, because, I mean, the hair that was found near the body was in a wooded area. People can be in and out all the time over there. So, I mean, I don't see what that has to do with it anyway, but that's what they're saying anyway.
Okay, there was one document in that dump that I found hugely, hugely interesting, and that was the interview that was held in late February between the police and River Cruise's twin sister, Celia or Sky or whatever she's calling herself this week. Peter, I want to kick off with you, but before we get into this transcript, can you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself? They've been howling like wolves for days.
Okay, I'm an investigator, and I've been studying for a number of years statement analysis, which is also called verbal polygraphy, scientific content analysis. What it is basically is learning to listen to what people say and not to interpret what they say, but to listen to what they say. Statement analysis is something that we all do, whether we recognize that or not. And it is something that, once studied and once learned, will enable a person to discern deception when deception is present. In some places, in some tests with the U.S. military, for instance, it has been shown to be just about equal to the polygraph machine when conducted by a very strong, good interviewer. The polygraph machine has very high results when we have a skilled polygrapher working it. Statement analysis is very, very much the same thing. It's very old. It's from antiquity. We have an early example from King Solomon that is one of the best examples of how it was used in an investigation. Can I relate that story?
Certainly.
There were two prostitutes living in a tent in ancient Israel. About a time when there was the, most experts believe the population would be about 1 million people, 1.1, 1.2 million people. And they were living in a tent together. They both gave birth to male children. And the infants, the newborn infants, slept with them. One of the women rolled over and smothered her son to death in the middle of the night. When she perceived what she had done, she switched the babies. The next morning, the mother, who now had a dead child at her chest, woke up and said, "This is not my child." But this was before the advent of DNA testing, and it's likely that both women looked very similar and the babies were about the same age. So they took it to a local judge who couldn't decide. It was a she said, she said type of situation. They took it to an appellate and more appellates, and for some strange reason, and I don't know how it came this way, it made it to the king's palace. And the king made the decision that I think most of your listeners are probably familiar with, where he pulled out the sword and said, "Take the living child, cut him in two, and give each woman half." And one woman said, "That's fine with me." And the other woman said, "No, don't. Just let her have him." But what they don't realize is before Solomon did that, he used statement analysis. He asked the women to tell him what happened. And this interview took maybe all of 2 minutes. He listened to what they said, and he made his decision based upon what they said. And his decision was proven correct by the sword demonstration. What he said was, each woman made their argument why the child was theirs, and he repeated the arguments back. He said, the one woman says, the dead son is hers, but the living son is mine. But the other woman says, no, the living son is mine, the dead son is hers. And then he waited, and everyone kind of shrugged their shoulders looking around, and they didn't get it. So he said, bring me a sword. Take the living child and cut him in half and give each woman half. Now, Solomon had no intention on committing that murder. He was merely demonstrating that their words, he repeated their words, to show who was the true mother. The mother, with the maternal instinct, immediately said, no, let the other one have the baby. And Solomon said, that's your mother. But what we notice is, when he repeated their arguments, one woman said, the dead son is hers, the living son is mine. The other woman said, no, the living son is mine, the dead son is hers. Order is important. The order in which we speak tells much about what we're thinking. So if I said to one of your listeners, tell me the names of your children, they would likely name them in chronological order. If it wasn't chronologically given, it may be because it's a newborn. But the order of which we say things is very important. Solomon showed, and this goes right up to Susan Smith's case, Solomon showed that a mother's instincts are going to, by nature, name her son first. One woman said the dead son is hers, naming the dead son first, but the other woman said, no, the living son is mine. So the order of which they spoke is one of the principles of statement analysis, which we use. So if I were to say, I have three sons who play ice hockey, and I'm going to go buy hockey equipment, which is very expensive, at Played Against Sports. The sign says, Played Against Sports, used and new. Used comes first, which tells me, as most hockey parents would be able to tell you, that there are more used equipment than there are new equipment. They sell more. I think they shut down by now, but the idea that order is important. And so that's one of the first demonstrations we have of statement analysis in order. Jump ahead to the Susan Smith case.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'm gonna break in here because I really, really want to focus on Kaylee and Haley. There was a transcript that was released between the police and River Cruz's twin sister, Kalila or whatever her name is. What's the gist of that transcript?
I had the transcript in front of me, and I began to work on the analysis today, and it would show that Sky, just for a lack of a better word, Sky is not only being deceptive, but Sky has revealed that her motive is to make money and fame from this. So I don't believe that Sky is telling the truth at all.
Really?
It's quite clear.
Now, this transcript is fascinating insofar as that Sky was incarcerated in the same location as Casey Anthony. Am I correct so far?
I believe so, yeah.
Yep. And she was actually the postmistress. She was the person shuffling letters between Casey and a couple of other inmates. Follow me still so far?
I'm not sure if that's accurate or not. If she was one that was facilitating it. It's a little bit fuzzy there.
Right. Okay. Now, her twin sister happens to be River Cruz. But apparently, during the jail time, the Sky and River never, ever discussed the fact that they both had an Anthony connection. I mean, I find that really odd.
It's strange credibility. It's
right.
Does.
Okay.
One of the things we notice about... I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, you carry on.
One of the things we notice about Sky, it's called a negation, where someone offers information that has not been asked. So if we were talking and I suddenly blurted out, I'm not an alcoholic, and you would say, we weren't talking about alcohol. Why did you say that? Well, that's called a negation. It's an offering of information. One of the things that Sky did first and foremost when this hit the media was demand that people know that she's not in it for money. No one had asked her at that point about money, yet that was what was in her mind. That's what she was thinking. That was what she brought up. Here, in the interview, she's often asked compound questions, which are considered a no-no in interviewing because by asking a compound question, you allow the subject of the interview to answer any question they wish. And she's rather skillful when it comes to dodging questions. And she describes certain things that really leave me wondering not only if it happened, but I'm quite sure that she would fail a polygraph. She claims to have a altercation of some form where she told off Cindy Anthony, and very, very different from her sister, which I believe, and this may be something new, that they're not twins. That's the latest thing I've heard. Has anyone else heard that?
Not me.
Not that I can remember.
Okay, there's one line in the transcript that just caught my attention. Like you wouldn't believe. For months, the rumors have been swirling about Baez having a relationship with Casey. I'm not sure if it's Melick or one of the other people in the interview that they ask the question, and they keep it really low key, but it's loaded to the max. Did she say anything about her lawyer? What do you make of that, Peter?
Well, first of all, if we go back to Fox News, when Jose Baez, early in this case, he was seen on video canoodling with Casey Anthony. And then we learned that she was spending up to 6 hours a day in her lawyer's office while she was out on bail. Then we learned that the jail had two or even three times had to admonish him for keeping his hands off her. All this information was out, and the Fox News on the Geraldo show, his co-host had said, "Are you having an inappropriate relationship with your client?" And in statement analysis, when someone asks a question, we have a rule. If they don't answer, they've answered. It's very safe for you to say, "How would you answer that question?" It's very normal practice. How would you answer it? Well, Jose Baez was asked, "Are you having an inappropriate, or did you have an inappropriate relationship with Casey?" And he said, "I'm not going to dignify that with an answer. I'm not going to go there."
Yeah, I remember that.
TJ, I know that you don't follow this case closely because it's not in your geographical region, but what do you make about this conversation? Oops. I guess we...
Hello?
TJ, are you with us?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I had to go get the weather alerts there. I tried to mute the phone, and I guess that's probably why you couldn't hear me. please ask the question again, Simon. I'm sorry. I was momentarily distracted.
Oh, no problem. We're talking about the Casey Anthony
case. Oh, yes.
Case.
Uh-huh.
I know that you're not following it closely for the radio because it's outside of your geographic region.
Mm-hmm.
But what do you make of this week's developments? I mean, there was a transcript released where the cops ask River Cruz,
yes,
who supposedly has had an affair with George. Actually, they asked her sister. Did Casey ever talk about her lawyer? And they were obviously fishing. You know, they want to pin an inappropriate relationship on him.
Oh, big time. I mean, that's pretty much the big talk is George, oh my God, George. And it's kind of taking the focus off everything else that's going on with this case. And it seems like people are more into the storyline of the soap opera than they are in the case of the child.
What concerns me is that they've booted Judge Strickland off. In fact, we had... Dave, Dave Neckett, I think his name is.
Neckel.
Yeah, oh, yeah, we had him on last week, yeah.
Right. And I mean, he had done nothing inappropriate, but by booting the judge, they've now moved the case into, who knows when this will go to trial.
Possibly in May of 2011, I think, is what they were looking at as far as... Yeah, and they're still trying to hold true to that, but there are going to be so many motions stacked up on this. I mean, that could go all the way to September, October of 2011. The thing is that Strickland recused himself. Not necessarily the boot, he self-booted. But the thing is that in this new age of social media, you're going to be seeing situations like this crop up from time to time where you have citizen journalists or just nosy bloggers, and it's hard to tell the difference between the two because there's really no filter there now with the social media aspect and the websites and what have you, interloping in and trying to be a part of the story by perhaps getting cozy with anything from a street cop to maybe a police captain to perhaps somebody on the state's attorney's office to perhaps even a judge again. And what about those jury members? And if you're a member of a social media and you're playing around on Twitter or you're playing around on a variety of websites under an assumed name, how are they going to know, when it gets to a jury member, who's doing what? I mean, this has far-reaching implications, and what you saw was just the tip of the iceberg of the way that we might have to realign how things are done in the judicial system from here on out, as far as taking into new things into account. And I think Mr. Hyatt would probably have his ears perched up on that as well, because I do believe that might be the wave of the future.
Well, Judge Strickland, he did tell us in his release, not only did he take a great shot at Paez, but he said it was personally impacting him. It was bothering him. His work was no longer that joy that he had in it.
Uh-huh.
And I'll tell you what, Baez, he tweaked a lot of noses in the beginning with that machismo attitude. If I'm a defense attorney, which I'm not, I don't think it's the wisest thing to go around and poking at law enforcement and poking at prosecutors and poking at this one and poking at that one and making enemies everywhere, just constantly making enemies. That's not in Casey Anthony's best interest. So I felt sorry for Judge Strickland, but I think that this next judge may end up putting the brakes on the not only Jose Baez, but the good old boy mentality of you go ahead and trust me and we'll have a beer later type thing.
Yeah, that's out the window.
Yep, I think that's done now.
According to the ancient Mayan civilization, the world is going to end on December the 21st, 2012. And I have a feeling that indeed the world might end before this case actually goes to trial.
Let's hope not.
Peter, I'm going to go back to you for a second. That transcript, one of the points that's brought out is that the Anthonys knew that Sky had been incarcerated and had contact with their daughter. Yet, time and time again, she says, no, the Anthonys did not ask me about that. Is that reasonable?
There's that, and there's a number of things that Sky is using that's not reasonable. On the transcripts, I think her name is Cecilia.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how to say that, but number three is considered a liar's number. For some psychological reason, liars will generally cling to the number three. There's only one time when people don't say the number three. Can you guess that one? When the officer pulls you over and says, how many drinks did you have? Just two, officer. Just two. But liars have a tendency to cling to that, and one of the things that stuck out at me this morning as I was going through this was when she was texting to, she claims that Sister River was texting George, and she got on and grabbed the phone and started texting George for not showing up. And each time she refers back to the number three repeatedly. And the third time there was a text that he said that he was coming, he was on his way, and he gave her some type of lie and found out that he never came to the gate when he wasn't there. And I thought about the gate issue, and I thought, my goodness, remember they said that they would have a record of who came to visit at that gate? And here we have Sky referencing that gate, the I guess the security guard at the entrance of the apartment complex.
Right.
And here she is referencing that. She was doing a really, making a strong, valiant attempt at sounding credible, and she's not credible. In fact, sometimes she calls a river, sometimes she calls a crystal, and I was looking at the context of seeing if there was a reason for it, for the change of language, and there's not. And each time she refers back to the number three, the third time the text, he stood up my sister three times, she repeats it twice, and then she begins to stutter. And from what I can tell in the transcripts, when someone stutters with the first person singularly, I, when they stutter two or three times, it shows anxiety. When it's over three, it can get to a point where this person may be hospitalized. When it reaches the number nine, that's usually a murder case. But she was stuttering in anxiety here, as she was not simply answering their questions, but she was trying to present a story to them and trying to put herself into this case. Very sensitive about her being in prison as well, too.
Oh, indeed. Cobra, we haven't heard from you, and it's not often you're quiet.
Just picking in some notes there. But I go back to the one thing. I have sources very close to that case. You know, I am a personal investigator for Richard Grund. And, of course, I was closer to the case than most folks, closer than I wanted to be. In fact, I was doing a little search and rescue over in Glades County and was threatened with going to jail if I didn't give up all my sources. I never gave up my sources, never do. And I didn't go to jail, but Putnam got me. But anyway, back to the one question where there was some controversy going back and forth as to who found out what and was she having sex with her lawyer. And it was Steve or Richard there said that she'd been in the lawyer's office all day long, every day. There were some comments made to her friends, and I don't know if these have been released publicly, but it's my opinion, since I don't know if they've been released yet, and I don't want to be the one releasing that information, but I would say it's my opinion that their behavior was inappropriate. How about that?
Well, I would think sure. So. I mean,
okay. Inappropriate
how many people
behavior.
Spend that much time
in the
lawyer's office?
Yes. Well, it's not just the time in the office. It's some of the neck rubs and some of the different things
mm-hmm.
that were going on. The behavior was mildly putting inappropriate for an attorney-client relation. And, of course, there's a whole lot of things. I sure would like to pick Mr. Wyatt's brain on the information that was going back and forth in the jail as to who got crunked up.
Oh, and we will be getting to that.
Oh, really? Well, there's things that Richard Grund has, kind of gagged me on, being he is my client. There's certain things I can talk about and certain things I can't talk about. And when I do talk about something, I try to keep it as mildly as I possibly can because, you know, he will end up, like us, having our day as spin at the bottle, if you will. And everybody was, just like in the other case, the Haley case, everybody pulling fingers needlessly at other folks trying to find a scapegoat. But, you know, they should have done their homework, got a hold of a guy named Wyatt, and they would have been able to pick better people that would have caused us to keep guessing for a little while longer.
Okay. And I do want to get a comment from Denny Griffin. Denny doesn't say much. He thinks, he analyzes, and then he comes out with the most astounding statements. Denny, what are you making of all of this?
Yes, I think it was hit on about the what was Cobra's term, inappropriate conduct between Baez and his client. And it's, if that was all there was to it, if a neck rub or spending a lot of time in the office, if nothing went on beyond that, there was still, I think, in my opinion, unprofessional and created the appearance. It opened the door, if nothing else, for allegations or speculation that maybe something was happening. Now, the time spent in the office, if that was legitimate, certainly she, Casey, was under the Constitution allowed to spend whatever time she needed in the furtherance of her defense, and that is not a problem. If it was excessive, though, and gave this appearance that perhaps something was going on besides just a legal consultation, then I think it harmed them, and I believe it was Peter that mentioned what would be the logic, or all these things don't seem, in my opinion, to be benefiting Casey. It just furthers some of the anger toward her, the mistrust for the whole defense team, Baez, and now his the new people on board. So I'm not really sure if that's intentional. It's either an intentional strategy that I don't quite understand, or it's basically stupidity. I'm not sure which it is.
I think there's a lot of both. All right, I know that we have people chomping at the bit to talk about the Haley Cummings case. TJ, apart from the dueling grandmas, which I'll come back to, has there been any movement this week?
Well, we found out what most everybody already knew to be true, that them bones at the river were animal bones that the University of Florida forensic lab picked up. When Sheriff Jeff Hardy said no human remains were found, he meant it. And somehow that got twisted around into some facets of the media that human bones were found and shown to Misty Crosland at the dock when she was taken out there to take a look at the boat ramp and everything. They were in plain sight. I mean, they were going through them. They were getting ready to haul them away. Nice visual aid. And like I had said earlier, there were maybe three reasons to bring her out there. One, to scare the crap out of her. Two, to scare the crap out of her. And three, if she'd say something. So, you know, is it illegal for police to perhaps get an excitable utterance from someone who may know more about the case than he or she is letting on? Hell no. They do it all the time. You just can't plant evidence on somebody, and there are a lot of things you can't do. But can you perhaps put something in plain sight that's going to get somebody's attention? Oh, hell yeah, you can do it all the time. There's nothing wrong with it. Of course, that was a cause for debate and cause for a lot of consternation and some admonishments to some members of the press for stating that they were human bones and that they should not be exercising such sensationalism in the wake of such a serious case. In fact, in any case, you'd want to go against sensationalism. I will tell everybody right now so that there's no confusion that my reporter's report on this case, I do not go out on the ground anymore out there due to some health reasons and some other reasons that prevent me from doing so, but primarily my health. I'm not a ground-pounding investigative reporter when it comes to stories like that anymore. I do have our reporters, Doug Clifford, John Boyer, and Jessica Chasmar, who do a lot of the footwork. I'll do the completed story and post it on the sky973.com, but I'm not out there like I was in the past asking a whole lot of questions and getting into it with other people. I've delegated that to staff. So just so that there's no misunderstandings about this, that, or the other, I want to get that out up front. But as far as anything else, it's basically a waiting game, waiting to see when the Putnam County authorities, when the FDLE and the FBI are going to say something at this stretch of the game. Everything else is pure speculation as to whether or not the dueling grannies really had anything to do besides provide some entertainment value. I'm not certain. That's, you know, everybody saw that on television that cared to see that. And you're going to walk away with your own interpretation of what you saw, what you thought you saw, what you heard, and what you maybe thought you heard or wanted to hear. So I'm going to leave that up to everybody. But that was pretty much it. Like I said, there's a lot of sources say, and unconfirmed reports going on out there, but we have to wait till the dust settles before we get any kind of real story. So once again, it's a return to the circus.
All right, I'm gonna run a wild experiment here. I'm gonna wind the clock back to February the 10th of 2009. Jan, you're my guinea pig on this one. Yeah, aren't you the lucky one?
As always.
All right, it's 3 a.m. You've just woken up, and you have discovered that your child is missing. The back door is open. Oh, what are you going to do? Well, you're going to call 911.
Well, first I'm going to look and see where the child, if the child's in the house somewhere. And then, yes, when I make the call, I'm going to make, when my next move would be to call 911 and ask for help because my child's missing.
Okay, you wouldn't possibly explain to the operator that you just woke up?
Not first, no. I think my first panic would be help. I mean, I need help. My child's gone. And then naturally they're going to ask you what happened, and that's when you would probably say it. But, no, whenever it's the first impression that you get is help, somebody help me find my child. I had, one time I had that happen to me. I mean, it was silly, but it was to me, it meant everything in the world to me. My son got off the bus at on another door, and I got out on one, and I couldn't find him, and I was pounding on the bus, yelling, my son's not with me, my son's missing, help me. And, I mean, it was just a panic fear. So, I mean, that to me would be what you would automatically, first thing you would do is yell for help, that somebody help me find my child.
Okay, Peter, this is obviously a segue into you.
Okay. I think TJ used passive language. He said that regarding the bones that it got reported, and I think he's being very polite, but he's making the emphasis on what journalism should look like. Well, there is an entire science of understanding that's dedicated just to 911 calls, and there's a high percentage of 911 calls on domestic homicides that are made by the actual killer. And what we looked at in Misty's statement was what is going to be the first thing out of her mouth if she is even in the role of step-parent is going to be that missing child. What she did was she didn't report a missing child. She was persuading and editorializing something. She said three things. Number one, I was sleeping. I just woke up. She needs them to know, first and foremost, the most important thing in her mind is that they believe that she's sleeping. The next thing she says is the back door was open. And it's almost like an operator is going to say, I'm sorry, what's your emergency?
Right.
Oh, by the way, there's our child is missing. Our daughter, as she said, I'm sorry, our daughter is missing. Now, our daughter is the language of step-parenting. It's very natural that if there's a step-parent involved, a biological parent will often say my, but if there's a step-parent, they'll say our. It's just very natural.
Mm-hmm.
And I had pointed out initially that that she may have leaned towards this way, considering herself a stepchild, but Pat Brown, the profiler, came back and said, you know what, she hasn't known Misty Haley very long. That sounds rehearsed to me. And I said, you know, I really need to step back and consider that, whether that was rehearsed. So I think that Jan has it right on. The first thing that comes to a mother's mind, to a father's mind, to a babysitter's mind is going to be what the emergency actually is. And here we find this one is an obvious attempt to persuade.
Yeah, I agree with you.
We also know that when that first interview was given where she was crying the next morning, boy, she revealed much. And Simon, we've spoken of this before, but she said, I loved that girl. She loved me. Past tense. And that was how the case down south was solved. When Susan Smith had drowned her sons, she spoke about those kids in the past tense. So while the local law enforcement was setting up roadblocks and trying to find the carjacker that stole the kids, the Federals, the statement analysis people, they grabbed it and said, nope, that mama spoke in the past tense. Those kids are dead and she knows it. because maternal instincts alone, that when a child dies, a mother will continue to use present tense language, even knowing the child is dead, unless there's something nefariously there. And for Misty, she spoke in the past tense. Casey Anthony did it, the same thing. She did it several times. She loved the park. One time she did, she actually corrected herself. Loves the park. They spoke in the past tense, both Misty and Kaylee, and Casey, I'm sorry. They knew. They knew pretty well.
Ouch. Denny, any thoughts?
Yes, I think that's very telling, and I got to be honest with you, I didn't pick up on that at first, so I thank Peter for pointing that out, but I agree. It's I think it's very damaging in both cases, in the Kaylee and the Haley cases, that use of the past tense.
Okay.
Many crimes have been solved by that verb tense by itself, and they listen very carefully for that. I had attended a seminar where a mother had spoken about her baby was shaken by a babysitter. And this child had been dead for over a year, and the mother still slipped into present tense language. She couldn't help herself. It is just a very natural thing to have that instant denial. This is a year later, and she's warning people about shaken baby syndrome, and she's slipping into present tense. And whenever a parent of a missing child speaks of the past tense, I've never seen a case where it didn't happen, where they knew the child was murdered. And the question, of course, is how did she know?
Wow. Yep, that certainly gives you food for thought. Let's move on to those old new tapes that tore up the internet last week. I'm referring to them just as the Cobra tapes. Yeah, it's a bit like the White House or what was the, can't remember now.
Watergate tapes?
Watergate. Tapes.
Watergate.
I'm old, I remember it.
Yeah.
You too.
I mean, Cobra, I can honestly say that you stand no chance of winning an award as a sound engineer.
I'm not in the sound business. I'm in the information recovery business. I'm an information broker, and never had any schooling in that. And I just wanted to, before you go too far down the road, I wanted just to agree with Mr. Wyatt there, and that's something that TJ and I discussed day one. I've only had almost 8 years training in it, and, of course, Mr. Wyatt's highly more advanced than I am. In fact, he instructs the class, but I went through a bunch of those sound We used to call them truth or dare, and as TJ and I was up there, I says, TJ, what do you make of this? They're talking past tense. Everybody's talking past tense. Hell, this thing sounds like everybody already knew what happened. But nonetheless, moving forward to those Watergate tapes, that's what we do, man. We gather information. We try to separate the fly shit from the pepper. So I want Mr. Wyatt to give
and
me his opinion on it. I'm thinking about Wyatt Earp. So, Mr. Hyatt, I want him to give an opinion on those tapes. TJ and I have been through them, quite extensively, and I have my own opinion as to what I believe I hear. But, when you get a little older, sometimes you hear things,
Well, I'll tell you what. Before we do that, let's take a caller. And we have a caller from the 563 area code. What's your name and what's your question or comment for us?
Hi, Simon. It's Kim. I just have two things. When they took Misty and Tommy down to the river, do you think that could have been so that the other would think that the other was telling them about Haley being dumped in there, when actually they were talking about the animal remains being dumped in there? And also, there's an interview of Misty and her mom on the couch, and a reporter asked her about when she puts Haley to bed that night, and Misty said that she had to cover up with a sheet because her blanket smelled of pee, and she had to wash it, and then she said, and my blanket was in the van they took. I was wondering if anybody heard that.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, and then one more thing. Who has to get the death certificate? Does Does Crystal have to get a death certificate before Sheriff Hardy can arrest someone, or how does that work?
No.
Absolutely not. Oh, okay, Cobra, why don't you run with the blankie story?
The blanket story? I just think that, Mr. Hyatt said, nobody asked for that information. You know about who was covered up with what and where it was covered and where her blanket was. It was just going to show, she's kind of foretelling what she had done. That was my opinion of it. And the blanket was in the van, as far as I know. And it's just, that story hasn't changed since I hit the ground on March 11th. That story's been the same story.
Does that answer your question?
Yes. Thank you, Cobra. And how are you doing?
I'm doing fine. And no, you don't need any death certificates. In fact, no death certificate a lot of times is even issued in these cases to way late till after it's solved or whatever to actually a coroner writes off on it. But Jeff Hardy can make an arrest anytime he wants as soon as he gets all the players. And I think that the only thing holding anything up here is we obviously know at this point there was more than one person involved in this. And before you close the hen house doors, you want to make sure the fox is out and all the captees are inside, and then you close the door. So good job to him and for taking patience on it. A lot of folks would have ran right out there and, grabbed one or two, but I think he's sitting back to get them all.
Right. Okay, well, thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
Okay,
bye-bye. Okay, let's go back to the Cobra tapes. And I do want to give some credit here. That they were not easy to listen to, and I want to give a huge thank you to Carpe, Holly G's mum, and Pam Page for helping us get them transcribed. You did a wonderful job. Cobra, I'm going to come back to you. What did you make of the conversations?
Very bizarre. I mean, very bizarre. As a father of five children, if one of my kids was missing, and this is only about a month and 3 days into the investigation, damn sure put the hair up on your arms, to where you think, my God, this father couldn't be involved in this. I mean, it was so displacing. I had to get a Webster dictionary. I had to figure out what words I would put on this. I mean, it's bizarre. I guess this bizarre conversation. Had I been the guy who lost a child and some investigator would have come up to me and asked the questions, and you notice I was pretty blunt on some of the questions and straightforward as to what was going on prior to this, during this, and that, I'd have probably told the guy to piss off. I've been 38 hot, find my kid and then come back and ask me some questions. I don't know. Those people up there, I don't want to classify them all as crazy, but, man, some of them are just bizarre, totally bizarre.
Oh, okay. TJ, have you had a chance to listen to them?
I had a chance to go through some of the transcripts, and, yes, I've listened to some of those. I had almost a year ago or less when I heard them the first time. They're very hard to hear. But in it, you hear a lot of question and answer, and you hear Ron trying to give some answers, but it seems that his answers are always just kind of jagged, and I think he's thrown off a little bit by the questioning when I listen to it, but I have to go through the transcriptions again because as I read the transcriptions, it's making a lot more sense, and I haven't gone through them completely, so I'm not going to comment too much further.
The comment that really caught my attention was it was like something out of Lake Placid.
That's the part where I got to when they were referring to fishing on the bank with Junior Hank, Tommy Jr. and Joe and watching the alligators. That was a creepy read. And it reads a little bit better than the way I heard it, but it was creepy.
Okay, Peter. We need your thoughts on this aspect.
Well, first of all, what we must do is enter into the subject's language. And I think Cobra did a magnificent job. Whether he understood Ron's language or not is a different story, but he was able to reflect back to Ron and use Ron's language and get Ron to speak. So I think in that sense, in spite of the audio difficulties, he did an excellent job with this. One of the
good
things
Lord,
that really stuck out to me.
Someone's saying Cobra's a nice guy.
I'm going to pass out.
He got Ron to speak, so that's pretty good. But Ron used language that reflects back to your caller's question about the laundry. When a person is speaking, what's in their mind slips out, even if they're answering a different question. And you and I have spoken about Cindy Anthony in the Woods, which maybe we can touch on later. But here, Misty talked about doing the laundry. Later on, Ron said there was no detergent, so no wash was done.
Mm-hmm.
Why did that slip into her mind, much like the bricks at the house? But washing, clothing washing, hand washing, bathing, showering, water, cleansing, all are the language of sexual abuse. When it enters into an open statement, unprompted like that, it is often an indicator of sexual abuse. Now, back to the Cobra tapes, and I like that name, by the way. That's very cool, the Cobra tapes. The Cobra tapes, do you notice how Cobra will use Haley's name, but Ron won't? He'll only say, my daughter. A parent who sexually abuses a child will avoid using the child's name. They will minimize any damage that was done or any sexual abuse. They'll deny, or they'll say, I was giving sex lessons to, or just teaching, or something, wild excuses. But they will often not use the child's name, even at the hospital, when a child is brought in. They avoid at all lengths. And I saw that as Ron repeatedly referred to my daughter in some extremely cold and distant ways. I didn't realize it as I was going through them, and many thanks to your listeners who did the transcription. It was a great help. I didn't realize that this was 12 months ago. Ron was already fully zoned on his alibi then. So not only, we all know, it's public knowledge that Ron was involved with the Department of Children and Family down there. He himself referenced it, so that's not confidential information. We've seen we've heard enough at least to know that this is a very violent, scary person that people are afraid of. The language that he used on the back of the 911 call, which I'm going to ask Cobra a little about later too, is, why'd you let my daughter get stole, the B word. That's the language of domestic violence. So we know he was a violent guy, and he revealed more about drug use in that tape, which I'm going to ask Cobra about also. But specifically, the first thing that jumps out to me is from the caller, is that washing, is that Ron refers to his daughter never by name, even when Cobra does. I wondered, Cobra, did you have any feel for him as a parent, what he was like as a parent?
Uh-oh, we've got Cobra speechless.
No, I didn't hear that. I never heard anybody of that authority say I did a great job like that. I really appreciate that. I fell out of my chair, but I'm in the chair now.
No, Cobra, Peter, repeat the question and let Cobra try it again.
Sorry.
Cobra, I was drawing a parallel between the caller asked about Misty washing the blanket and the use of blankets, washing, covering, cleansing is in the language of those where sexual abuse is in the topic. And when Ron spoke, he used language that is common to those who abuse children. He did not refer to Haley by her proper name. You did, though. And I was wondering, you said you're a dad of five. Did you have any sense of the way he was towards children in general, towards his own children? Any indicators of abuse in your mind?
Well, I didn't pick up too much on the abuse side of it, but to me it sounded like he, you don't want to mention the name of the deceased. And it seemed to me that in talking to him, he was already it clear in his mind that his child was dead. He did it on the 911 tapes. He did it in front of me with his comments. It was like a past tense, the child's already dead. Misty, on the other hand, the washing, the cleansing, and all that, somebody who's done an evil deed. Going back, you referred to scripture earlier about Solomon. Well, it's kind of the story of Cain and Abel. You can't get that blood off your hands. No matter how much you wash, no matter how much you cleanse, no matter what you talk about, it just don't go away. That shedding of innocent blood just don't go away. It just don't. So that's why I'd rate to her of all the cleansing stuff going on. She's cleaning and she's doing laundry and all these things talking about cleaning. Him, he was like bragging that, I've got my daughter tattooed on my leg here. I got this over here, my daughter. And if you notice, I mean, some people would think basically I when I'm interviewing someone, I change up dialect. In other words, I'll change and become like his brother talking to him, and using his same kind of words. But I specifically stayed with Haley and not referred to his daughter for that very purpose, just to see how much past tense. And then when we got into the alligators and how an alligator, now I could see me sitting down with the hopefulness that my daughter has just been kidnapped or maybe stolen by another family member or something, which I was hopeful of. But yet we're going to discuss about how alligators take their prey and push them into a pod and put them in the silt and hide them out underground and everything. So everything from the 911 call forward told me that he already knew his daughter was dead. And the only question I didn't ask him, which I wanted to, but I couldn't find a break in there, is how did you know your daughter was already deceased, brother, when she made that call? And I wanted to get a shock and awe, and that goes back to the showing of bones down on there. If they really did show any bones, I didn't see them show any bones, but if they did show bones, if someone of callers asked why would they do all that, it was for the shock and the awe of it. You want to see people's knee-jerk reaction when you ask a specific question and that type of thing. But I wish I'd have had you nearby me then, Bubba, so you could have guided me just a little bit, and that's all I was looking for, is a little bit of help, a little bit of guidance, because this was the freakiest shit that I've ever run into in my life, and conversations, and there's been a lot of conversations. I've interviewed just about everybody in that town, and some of them are very, very strange. The daddy, his was, to me, was the strangest. Misty's, of course, was all over the place, but his is all past tense. It seemed like he already knew this child was dead, he's going to take out the trash, and, whoever did it, so be it. I don't think I would say, somebody did it. And then, let them hang or let them die or whatever the hell he said, and so be it. I mean, come on. To me, I think that's probably what everybody's holding out for, to find out who besides Misty is involved in this, and is Misty the cover, and is Joe the scapegoat? And, that's the questions I want to know.
Okay. I want to get our other panelists to weigh in. TJ.
Yes, sir.
Any thoughts?
I'm still absorbing all of this, because what is going on now is that I have to listen to everything with a fresh set of ears, and I have to look at it with a fresh set of eyes. When you get in this kind of information, it's and then I'm hearing what Mr. Hyatt says, and of course going through the past and going through the past 15 months, it almost, you have to take what you know today and reanalyze virtually everything that you thought you knew and kind of put it to a test. What you know over here, what you may see with a fresh sense of what you're looking at and what you're listening to over on the other side of a T setup, almost like you're reconciling some kind of a budget or something. And I get the feeling that the work has just begun for a lot of folks. I know that I'm going to just look at things differently here and look at everything that's been covered in the past and maybe perhaps check for some revelations. I think there might be some there.
Yeah, I have a feeling that something has been missed, and that doesn't mean that I'm smarter than the PCSO, because I know I'm not.
Simon, I wanted to say this, since we were referring to those tapes. The Lake Placid and everything flipped everybody out. Well, I'll tell you what flipped me out, and I'll just give you an example. Last night, I went to the store. My girlfriend didn't have no cigarettes, so I had cigarettes. She didn't have any. So I went to the store, and I got cigarettes. And as I sit here, it took me a couple minutes to figure out what did I get. Well, I got some cigarettes, and I got some milk, and I got a candy bar, and I got a flower, and I got a card. And that was last night, and there was nothing detrimental going on in my life. Now, for Ronald, he allegedly, and I don't know this to be a fact, seems like a high number, called Misty 90 times. And then he gets off work, drives like a, a redneck getting off work and hauling ass.
Yeah, a cracker getting off work. Yeah.
A cracker, right?
Mm-hmm. When you don't go straight to the house, if I call my girl 90 times and she ain't answered the phone, hell, I'm leaving work. I ain't even going to stay work. I'm punching out and going to hell, see what the hell going on 90 times, and I'm damn sure not going to stop at the store. And if I do stop at the store, I couldn't tell you what the hell I bought. But you heard the tape? I bought a pack of Newport. I bought a pack of this. I bought a pack of peanuts. I bought a pack of Mountain Dew, and I got this. And, I got a cold beer. And I'm thinking, Jesus Christ, man, you called your woman 90 times. You don't go home. You will go to the store, and you can tell me specifically, exactly, fluently what you bought. So to me, I don't know.
It doesn't make a huge amount of sense. Denny, I know you've been listening and analyzing. Uh-oh.
Yes, I have. And I think, as TJ said, these discussions have opened up a whole new area, I think, for a lot of us. And it's going to have to be, I think TJ said, listening with a new set of ears. And going back over the statements, documents, tapes, and so forth that the various players have made since this whole thing broke, and taking a fresh look and seeing how this analysis changes or clarifies things that maybe we have missed in the past. So I think it's a whole new opportunity. To go back and take a fresh look, and these things for me or for others may change opinions, may take people who have been on the fence about certain of the players, and may change their minds, including me. So I'm kind of anxious to get into that. I think it's going to be, when you look at it in this way, some very revealing things are going to come out.
Guys, I want to interject something in here. When I did the show with Nancy Grace, and it was toward the end of our relationship, that show and mine. I was on with Nancy, and it was basically, hold the phone, TJ Hart, and it was like, okay, Nancy, settle down. But the phone call number was, at the time, we had somewhere between 23 and 28 attempts at telephone calls and/or text messages. When the FDLE was taking a look at Ron's phone, and Ron, I guess, had a meeting with his attorney over in St. Augustine. A nice fellow, Shoemaker, I guess his name is. Very nice man. Other reports from other journalists were indicating 90, and of course, if it happens on TV and it's a big number, it's got to be true, right? That's another passive-aggressive tone I use, so... I'll just be upfront with that. But what we got from FDLE was about somewhere between, if I'm remembering correctly, 23 to 28 attempts at phone calls or text messages that Ron had made to Misty that night. I wanted to get that clarified.
Okay. We do have a question coming in from the chat room.
Yes, I do, for Peter. One of our readers want to know, what do you think of Ron's acting during that 911 call?
I did not look at Ron's statements or Ron's acting early on much at all, because one of the first things that was reported, and I'm saying it in a passive way because I agree with TJ, these things are said on TV, so they must be true. But I was under the impression very early on that Ron had nothing to do with this, and that Ron was at work, and that Ron is this poor, innocent guy. So I went on to look at the 911 call and did the analysis there. Since that time, I knew right away, for instance, when he said, "How'd you let my daughter get stole, bitch?" I knew that it was not only the language of domestic violence, but there was also an element of drug trade there. Because it's a presumption. They're not thinking that she got out of bed and walked out and she's walking down the road someplace, we better find her. They're talking about her being stolen as retaliation for drugs. So I think his behavior, and including his walk and his presentation, and the fact that he's probably put on 20 pounds since he's been in jail, I think we're looking at a very dangerous, a very violent, far more into drugs than most people realize. In fact, one of the things I did today in looking at the transcription is I saw that, Cobra, you had some interaction with him about drugs, and my notes say drugs in his toes, that he was shooting up oxys in his toes. I shared that today with Pat Brown via email, and she told me that her sources, very close to the investigation, said that Ron was indeed shooting up between his toes. And this is when people do narcotics, they do like oxycodone, for instance. In order to get to the point where they're not eating, they have to do an awful lot of this stuff. They're probably right. shooting it up. And Cobra, I think he offered to show you his arms or offered to drop his pants for you. That's
yeah, he was going to wanted to show me his you know, his private parts. He wanted behind your behind his gonads. He wanted to show me behind his gonads. He was
see that part.
Yeah, he took his pants down, and I'm like, damn, man, people looking at you. Put your britches back on, man. I don't care if you're doing dope or not. And his eyes, if I could have took a needle and stuck a needle on a piece of paper and looked at his eyes and looked at that needle hole, his pupils were that small. I mean, this guy, and I told him, take your sunglasses off. I want to look in your eyes when you talk to me. He took them off. It was like two little pinholes there, man. I said, okay, he's hiring George Pashery. Jesus Christ. But I kept seeing him trade drugs and do different things, and I kept reporting to law enforcement, hey, these folks is doing a lot of dope. I don't know why they can't get them. And then finally, somebody did get them and got them good, too.
Well, I'm going to ask you another question about that in a second, but the use of the drugs, I think he probably was shooting up between his toes, that he used so much of shooting the oxys, whatever he was using, that when he stopped, in just a short time, he's put on 20 pounds at jail. He doesn't look like the same person, even.
Yeah.
One of Geraldo's producers said that interviewing these people down there was just like interviewing zombies.
Yeah.
That everyone was so stoned and so high and in trouble. But I'll tell you this, and this might sound like a shocking statement. Parents that are using narcotics like that, people that are using heroin or oxycodone, while they're high, they are some of the most loving, kind parents you could ever meet for that 3 or 4 hours while they're high. When that high goes down, the Jekyll and Hyde syndrome takes over. And I want to know, if he was stopping off to buy beer at 3 a.m., not only does he mention the video to you, the surveillance, which I have to ask you about, but if he's going to buy beer at 3 o'clock in the morning, who's getting up with the kids in 2.5 hours? Kids get up early.
Exactly.
What kind of parenting is that?
And that's not a crazy statement either, because most folks, and I've been around a lot of folks that you know, arrest them, and they're higher in Georgia Pine. They're nice as hell. They put their hands behind the bag, get in the car. Everything's nice. And if I've got to travel any distance at all to get them to a jail, before I get to the damn jail, they're buck-ass wild. I mean, they are buck-ass wild. They start coming down off that stuff, and they're much belligerent people. But normally, they're very nice. If you run into them and just got a fix on, they're very, I'm sorry, I shouldn't have done this. They're very apologetic and everything else. And then the minute that starts to come off of them, oh, shit, all hell breaks loose.
Now, you asked him about white boy Greg, and he was having sex with her. And, I, again, Cobra, I think you did a great job entering into his language. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that stuck out for me is that he dismissed it as if it was nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's unusual, because most guys are going to be really up and angry about that. And I think his reaction wasn't simply dulled by drugs. I think that there's not only drug trafficking, I think prostitution as well. What do you think?
You're right on top of it. I mean, there was a lot of trading of different things for the dope. You know, what interested me about that is I said, hey, is there any rumors to this? Because what had happened early on that week is she had got Timmy's wife's pictures of her sonogram showing that she was pregnant. And she was pregnant. Timmy's wife was pregnant. And she went and showed Ronald, because she has a mad, mad crush on Ronald. I mean, mad. So she's mad and little Ronald says, look, you know, I'm pregnant, and shows him sonogram. He rolls her into a ball, beats her belly, just like he allegedly had done to Amber Brooks' child, who is something wrong with his little brain, the little child, beats the belly on him. This is what I was told. And then throws her across the room into a mirror, breaks the mirror, cuts her arm, and she takes off down the road and hooks up with Nene Christina Pervette. Christina Pervette, then somehow or another they end up at Mrs. Lookadoo's house. She sees a picture on the wall and says, wow, that's a good-looking guy. And Mrs. Lookadoo says, that's my son. You want to meet him? They meet, and then the next 3 days, 4 days, they out doing the drug binge and everything else. So I'd known that they were over on Stokes Landing, and he was pissed beyond anything else at Christina Pervette for driving her over there, Nene. So that came out just a little bit. I don't know if you heard a copy of that. Then all of a sudden, I said, you know, I wanted to kind of see how his knee-jerk reaction was on that. And he basically dismissed it, as you heard, and I won't repeat his language. It's probably not suitable for some of the listeners. But, yeah, and I love her, he said. But the thing of it is this a woman that supposedly lost his kid. And he's loving her. She's been off with a feller for several days, drugging and everything else, now lost a kid. And the only thing he's saying is he loves her. And he's referring to Misty. And the kid kind of just forgot. So I'm like, damn, to me that was very eye-opening, the way he said it and everything else. Then all of a sudden, once I made comments about that later on, several days later, he's driving through the hood and has his other folks driving around trying to find white boy Greg. Now he wants to, you know, give him a pound of pleasure back, you know, kind of, you know, after him, you know, trying to seek him out and, I guess, beat him up or something. The person that he should have been mad at was his old lady. But he had some strange-ass behavior to where it would flip his way back and forth. At one point in time, he was chasing me around town. You know, and I'm thinking, damn, this guy has lost his mind. You know, I'm going to end up hooking up with the father of the missing child, and it's not going to be pretty. And then we discussed that as well. And I'm like, damn, aren't you interested in trying to find your child? That's what I want to know. Then we sprung from that right into what alligators do, and they put them up underneath the thing. So I don't know. You know, I heard all this, and I tried to get a profiler. I tried to reach out to that lady Dale, used to be with FDLE. I tried to get a profile of somebody else, someone like you, that had a little bit more education than I did, because this was swelling my head. I couldn't get my brain around it. And he kept saying, think. The answer's right there, think. And I'm thinking, what are you trying to tell me? You're the guy that did it. What the hell's going on here? You covering for Misty? Misty's covering for you? What, did y'all have an accident? Now you're using Joe Overstreet for a scapegoat? You got Tommy riding with me for 4 days, showing me all these places in the swamp, and then all of a sudden he's going to say, yeah, I was there. And I tell you what they've done. They've all wrapped a rope around them damn selves. Ain't nobody tied the noose in it yet. God damn.
Oh, okay. I'll tell you what. Let's go back out to the phone lines. We have someone coming in from the 309 area code. What's your name and what's your question for us?
Hello, this is Catfish. And the reason that I'm calling is to ask, recently Ron's attorney made a statement that Ron is hopeful that Misty was threatened or forced to be involved in this, and that's why she didn't open up to him. And I'm just curious, I don't care who answers, what your thoughts, why would they make a statement like that? I mean,
if you're the defense attorney, you're going to do anything and throw anything, including the kitchen sink, out there to clear your client. And if it's something that he also believed to be true, the attorney probably had no second thoughts about getting that out there, because right as we speak, even though a child has not been found, somebody's definitely going to be tried for this in the future, and he's trying to make sure that it's not his client. He played it smart by getting it out there. This is being played in the court of public opinion. You take a look at the chat room that's going on right now. People are assigning a guilt, blame, association, and everything else to the players involved here. And they're holding court themselves. And people who consume the news kind of do that in their mind already. And what you're also getting out to the local public are people who will actually become jurors should there ever be a trial in the case of this child. And that's going to stick with somebody, I guarantee you. And that's why the attorneys throw things out there at times, is because they hope that it will resonate or stick with someone, and if that someone happens to be a juror, it might be back there in the back of their mind, might not be instant recall, but it'll be back there. And that's why attorneys do things like that.
Well, it just seemed odd, you know, that he was almost providing Misty with some sort of an alibi, but at the same time,
right.
I guess it explains Ron's behavior for not, you know, for supporting her earlier. So
certainly.
You know, it is
I think it's just, I think you're close, but I think what it is Misty provided him alibi going into the thing, and it's like, you get me off, and I'll come to your rescue later. So now all of a sudden they throw it out there that Misty was forced, put into a position to lie, that somebody else did this stuff. And basically, when they were all high, and this goes back to getting high again, they're nice people, and also their brain works a different way. They're very, very right. intelligent. You take somebody on meth, they will figure out how to get in your credit cards and in computer and take all your damn money. When they come down, they can't figure out how they did it. When they get high again, by
let alone tie their shoes.
That's right. They're bookkeepers, man. They know. So I think what happened is Misty going into the thing, if you notice all the interviews that they had with Ronald and Misty, she would look to him for the answers. 4 feet away, 4 inches away. This way, that way, no, no, no. He's pretty much scripted her, looks to me. Then all of a sudden, he provided her enough way out in the beginning, or she provided him enough way out, and now through the attorney coming back around now and giving her a reach on it. But what happened is, you know, Tommy doesn't appear to be the brightest bulb in the box anyway, so now all of a sudden he's wrapped a rope around him damn self. So he's got the rope wrapped around him. He's told on Joe, wrapped the rope around Joe. It all goes back to Misty putting her covers over her head and all this crazy shit. So he's got the covers around there. He's got the rope wrapped around the three of them. But I say there's probably 4 to 7 people involved in this thing. And then who else knew about it and did the cover-up and helped for the cover-up? You know, somebody said they were dumb like zombies. The police have referred to them as dumber than rocks. It's like trying to interview a rock. I said the same thing. But here's the thing. I'll tell you where they're really, really smart. Ronald will tell you exactly what he got at the store that night. He can tell you what he did. He can tell you how he drove. He can tell you all that business. And then they can all tell you what Joe Overstreet did that night. Well, we got up, and the keys were moved. Oh, we got up, the van was moved. He went to bed in his boxers. He was fully dressed when we went in the room. There was 2 rolls of rope in the van. They missing. They know everything about the people they're throwing under the bus, but they don't know a damn thing about what time did you go to bed. I think it was 10, no, it was 9, it was 11. I fell asleep early. Did you watch the video? Yes, she was watching the video. I mean, everybody else's stories is confused except for the fall guys and the scapegoats. They got their shit down pat, and those stories did not change. The rest of the stories all changed, every one of them. So, you know, there's been some commentators out there, Mr. Tenfold Man, a couple other ones saying, well, Cobra's looking at this one, now he's looking at that one. I looked at every individual member of that family, even the ones I was working for, even at the police. I looked at everybody. There's got to be a scenario here. Everybody has to be looked at. The only person that's safe in the investigation is Haley. We're trying to find her, so everybody else has to be investigated. And if you start looking at all the crazy stories, Nene, Amber Brooks, this one, that one, hell, you have to look at all of them, and they all got something going on somewhere. Now, whether it ties to the disappearance of this child or not is unknown, but they got so much dirt going on amongst themselves to where this one is going to speak up for this one and then this one. I think that this whole thing that came out with Tommy is the strangest thing in the world. Now, you have to understand, I was in the swamps with this guy for 4 days. I know he smokes Newports. I know he likes Snicker bars and Mountain Dews. So every day that's what I was giving him, and he was riding. And one time I turned around and I said, you know, the murderer has been in my truck. Because Misty's been there, Ronald's been there, Tommy's been there. Everybody, just about Nene, Amber Brooks, everybody's been in my vehicle at one time or the other riding to show me something or tell me this or see this or doing an interview or whatever. And I turned to Tommy and I said, you know, the murderer has been in my truck. Are you the murderer? Jesus Christ. I should have asked him. I should have just told him Jesus was looking in the window because he flipped the Zoid right the hell out. So somehow or another, he's came back around to now putting himself right at the scene of the crime. He told Art Harris or one of them that he was down there smoking a joint with her at 6 o'clock. He told the police he was down there banging on the door at 10 o'clock. Ronald supposedly sent him down there. Then he denies all that. Now he's at the boat dock wrapping rope around a child and chunk him in the water. Has this guy lost his mind? Somebody's lost their mind. I swear to God.
Well, thank you, guys.
Don't get out of jail.
Yeah. All right.
Okay. We have another question coming in.
Yeah, well, I have a request from an email that I had gotten. They want me to ask Cobra something. They want to know, what do you feel that Ron was trying to say when he said that Junior would be with him forever until the day he dies, and even if he had to go out with him? They want to know, did you take that as like a murder-suicide type statement?
No, basically, at that time, here's the thing. At that time, you have to understand, there was one missing child already, and Crystal had lawyered up with Kim Boccaccio. Of course, that's where my case went downhill at that point in time. But nonetheless, the move was on that, damn it, you already lost one kid. We're not going to sit back and let you lose another kid. So the move was on to have Junior extracted from that house, and rightfully so, to move him into some safer, I don't know what would have been safer, but someplace safer other than that environment there. And in doing that, put a lot of steam on Ronald. See, it's always been said that Haley, you know, this has been put out there early on, and reason that I may have gotten into some serious trouble my damn self. It's always been said that Haley may not be Ronald Cummings' daughter, that it may be belonging to Mr. Robbie Middleton. And since that word went out on the street, everybody went buck-ass wild. And, of course, then they started looking at me sideways, and I said, damn, I'm not the only one that's heard this rumor or heard this, but little Butterbean most definitely is his child in his mind. So he put the tattoo on his leg. First, he only had the picture of Haley on his leg. And then somebody said to him, hey, the only time you put a tattoo of a kid on your leg is when the kid's dead. He then went back and put Butterbean's picture on his other leg. And, of course, both of them look like little Chuckies or something. I don't know if you've ever seen the tattoos, but they kind of, you know, I know the tattoo artist, but damn, that's the way he had them drawn out. But the thing of it is he said that Butterbean would always be with him. Basically, he was going to fight to the tooth and nail that the attorney and Crystal didn't get Butterbean out of his thing. And if the only thing he had to do was die, he would take Butterbean with him, meaning that tattoo on his leg. He never meant that he would kill Butterbean or anything like that. He was referring to that tattoo. If this is the only way I get to go out with him, then he's going with me like this. And that's what he was alleging to with the tattoo of Butterbean. But he's not willing to give up Butterbean, period.
Okay, we're going to take one more call, then we're going to get back to the program, because we're definitely running short on time. We have someone from the 615 area code. What's your name and what's your question or comment for us?
Well, I really didn't have a question or a comment. I was really kind of just enjoying listening.
Okay. That's fine. You sit tight and enjoy the show. All right. I'm going to throw a question out there.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know who wants to field it. Big announcement. This is now a homicide investigation.
Mm-hmm.
What was the turning point? TJ, I'm going to pick on you.
The turning point was that it was probably a little while back ago. I think Major Bowling with the Putnam County Sheriff's Office tipped his hand in an interview as people were pulling out. He said, look, everybody pretty much knew that we weren't looking for a live girl for quite a while here. But I think the thing that tipped Sheriff Hardy into going into that direction officially was the fact that he had the sheriff's office had received information about the boat dock from different sources, whether you want to believe it was from Granny Hollers, whether you wanted it to believe it was actually from Tommy, or if you wanted to believe it was from a PI who was at one time working for the Crystal Sheffield family, but it was also friends with Tommy's attorney. There are a variety of different people who pretty much had the same location pinpointed. It's just a matter of who actually it was who tipped off the information. But I think the finding of the cinder blocks was pretty much the knell that right there he said, that's it. We're looking at probably his words, probably a homicide. That's what he said, probably a homicide.
Peter, you watch from afar, shall we say? Do you have anything to weigh in on this question?
I thought it was interesting that Sheriff Hardy went back and forth between the I and we and I and we. He was very highly defensive in the sense that he was saying, you know, people are talking now, and I told you they're going to be talking. But then he said, I'm going to go ahead, I, singular, and call this a homicide. I think that it may be related, as TJ said, to Tommy's polygraph. Tommy, I think, passed and failed that polygraph, certain questions that were pass-fail.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's fascinating to me that the attorney took this information, or apparently is you know, if we can believe what we're hearing on television, took this information and went to law enforcement with it, and that's when things really began to pick up speed.
Okay. Peter, I have one more question for you. We've discussed both the Kaylee Anthony and Haley Cummings case, and what bothers me greatly is I see a great deal of similarity. Do you share my view?
I do. I think it's incredibly similar. Look at the ages of the both girls. Can you imagine any of us being 22 years old, being brought down by police detectives to Universal, actually going into the parking lot, actually going into the building, and walking down the hallway to my office, my fake office, and then finally owning it? And then jump to the other side, you have a 17-year-old who is, obviously, there's some cognitive limitations there. She's 17 years old, and she has been able to hang on for almost 14 months now. These are both very skillful liars for different reasons. I think Misty grew up in such a way that she lied for survival's sake, whereas Casey was manipulative and lying for whatever served her best interests. But they're both young. They're both remarkable liars. They're way beyond the realm of deception by withholding information. They actually fabricate reality. It's stunning.
And the drugs and all the stuff of wanting to go party and the tie down of the kids, the weight chain of the kids. There's 100 parallels.
The families that are related to them are just characters that grab our interests, and people feel very passionately, love them or hate them. This has grabbed our attention. This has grabbed the nation's attention. And there's been some excellent reporting that's been done, and there's been some reporting that I think makes the professionals cringe. When we looked at Ron's behavior, for a TV announcer to say, "I know you, Ron. I know you. You know, I know how sincere you are." Would you let Ronald babysit the twins?
Let me tell you something on that one. The night that, and TJ can attest to this,
yes,
the very
yeah,
night
yes,
that I was going to do the reenactment, because
uh-huh,
that was the only thing missing from this. We wanted to do, my company, Case Closed, wanted to do a reenactment of the entire crime scene. You lay down in the bed. We waited till the time got right. The darkness, the coldness, 11 o'clock at night. We wanted to pick the right time and everything, so we were holding it all back. And I'll never forget it as long as I live. I was sitting in Meemaw's having a glass of iced tea with Ronald Cummings, and we were waiting for Misty to join us, and then we were going to go to the trailer and set it all up and make it happen. Well, then all of a sudden, Ronald and I are sitting there talking and everything, and I may have touched just a little bit of one of his nerves. He has Nancy Grace on speed dial. He calls Nancy Grace up and, "Oh, yes, Ronald, I just finished feeding the kids, Ronald. How you doing? You everything all right? They're after me." He was freaking out, and she said, "Ronald, I'm gonna make some calls. I'm gonna try to get you a lawyer. I'm gonna get you a lawyer, Ronald, so that you know that you can have somebody represent you and all this." Now, when I heard that, originally I hired Art Harris to go into it because Art Harris had a tie. In fact, he's actually probably the one that got Nancy Grace in her show. So I knew this going into it. That's why I retained him and put him on the ground there, so whatever information came up with, he would get a hold of Nancy Grace, and bam, then the nation would know what the hell's going on in Satsuma, Florida. That was my whole plot. But when I heard Nancy Grace took Ronald's side, going to lawyer him up, and he's got her on speed dial, her personal cell phone, my
heart
sunk.
Did you see that, Coca?
Pardon me?
Did you see that for yourself?
I listened to it. I recorded it, bro. I was sitting there with him. I was on the wire the whole damn time. I can prove that beyond a shadow of a doubt. I was right there. He had her on speakerphone. Art Harris knows this to be a fact. Art Harris was sitting there with me. And I looked at Art Harris like, "What the hell? Here's Nancy Grace going to lawyer up Ronald Cummings, talking about getting him a lawyer. And there's good lawyers out there and everything, Ronald. And see what I can do. I'll give you a call tomorrow." He had her on speed dial, for God's sake. Her own personal phone.
That noise is my jaw hit the floor. I'm so shocked.
You're shocked. I flipped out. Well, guess what happened? Then all of a sudden, Misty calls, and she's not coming. He's on to us. I said, whoa, shit, I heard that. He has it on speakerphone. He's in my truck now. Now my silent witness is picking up everything. He's on to it. I ain't going to do it. Ronald, I'm going to leave you. I'm going back to Tennessee, okay? I'm going to Michigan. I'm leaving, Ronald. I swear to God, you get away from him and get away from him now. He's nothing but trouble.
Okay, I need to break in just for 5 seconds. We're about to lose the live feed, but folks, don't panic. We will have the entire recording. It'll be on Blogger News. Okay, carry on.
So the very next day, I mean, that blew it. I mean, the damn thing's gone. Now, also, he had made a phone call, and he alleged that it was made to John Merchant. That's who he alleged. Now, I don't know. I've shook hands with Mr. Merchant. I think he's a great investigator. I don't have anything negative to say about him or Putnam County Sheriff's Office. But he had contacted them and basically asked and said that we were going to do this reenactment, what they think. So it ended up from going that direction to no reenactment, and he's going home and stick a pistol in Misty's mouth and blow her head off. He says, now I know who did it, because I'm already on to him. I said, I heard what you said, Ronald. She said, get away from me, that I was on to y'all meaning you and her. So he's going to go kill her. Art Harris is witness to that. Art Harris and I then decided we can't let him go kill her. So we ended up summonsing the Putnam County Sheriff's Office and escorted him. They escorted us. We all went to Grandma's trailer out there in Welaka and did a wellness check on him. He come out. No, never said anything like that. Everything's fine. We were sleeping. What's going on? All this crazy shit. And that took us to about 3 o'clock in the morning. So then all of a sudden the next day, you know, I got kind of confused as to who was reporting on what, and me and TJ had a conversation. In fact, you could go on one of TJ's sites and hear the whole thing. This story is not a new story. This story, I was pissed. Nancy Gray screwed up my damn investigation and every damn thing else, and she's lawyering up Ronald Cummings. I was pissed, and I told Art Harris, I said, this is some bullshit, Art. I said, the reason I even brought you into this damn case so to get it out there, you can't be choosing sides. You can't choose a side, father, mother, whatever. Everybody's guilty until somebody tells us where this kid's at. So, and I aired that out pretty hard with you, didn't I, TJ?
TJ? We lost TJ.
We lost him. He probably ran for the hills because TJ's got it all on tape as well. I mean, I aired out pretty hard with TJ's that this is some bullshit. You know, I couldn't believe that Nancy Grace would have taken that side. And I always liked Nancy Grace. You know, my girl still likes Nancy Grace. But I'll tell you what, after that bitter taste in my mouth, and I went to a lot of trouble to set up this crime scene, to go back at it and get it all. You know, I went to a wake. I went over there and had to hang out around these folks for days and do all kinds of stupid shit. And then we got it all set up. We're going to do it. And then one little simple slip up, one phone call, lawyering up, and all this crap. And then it was over with, because I was going to get her to explain to me, hey, you were laying here in the bed, and where was your cell phone at? And you ran back to get your cell phone and all this other crap that was going on, and they couldn't do it. There is absolutely no way they could reenact that crime scene, buddy. It couldn't be done. And I knew right then and there, I said, Ronald, I don't know what your involvement is in this thing, but she said, he's on to us, Ronald. Get away from him. So I said, okay. Now, and then all of a sudden it was Ronald the next day lawyered up. I don't know if it was Nancy Grace's attorneys or who made the phone calls, but he lawyered up the very next day, and that was end of me and Ronald communicating in this case.
Okay, we do have to wrap this show up. We've lost TJ, but I know that we still have our senior analyst with us. Denny, give us your parting thoughts.
My parting thought is a question, actually. Can anybody there, or would anybody else care to speculate, when will we see an arrest or charges filed, assuming that possibly some of the people who may be charged are already in jail?
Let me get
when will there be action on this in that regard? And even if the charge is not a murder charge or a homicide-related charge at this point, possibly a kidnapping charge to start things with, if someone actually took Haley from that trailer that night, would anybody care to speculate on when we might see some more action?
Ain't touching it with a 10-foot pole, baby. That's
we
Cobra's word.
Soon.
Ain't touching it with a 10-foot pole.
Yeah, I mean...
There'll be arrest when there's arrest. They'll get them when they get them.
The good news is that Misty is looking at 100 years in jail, and the rest of them are all facing really, really grim terms. So what one can only hope that even if, you know, the case of Haley Cummings does become insolvable, at least the guilty parties will be spending time. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, I think it does. And for me personally, I don't know about anybody else, me personally, if this ends, that the Haley piece of this ends without a resolution, I think that would be absolutely terrible. You know, if it's left up in the air and the only people that do time are with the because of the drug charges, to me that would not be a satisfactory ending.
Exactly.
I don't know how it would be for the rest of you. I wonder what Peter thinks about that angle, about the potential charges and so forth.
I think that it's right around the corner, and I'll tell you why. And you make a good point about the lesser charges, perhaps kidnapping. Based on Sheriff's Hardy's own wording and the pressure they've been under, I think something is coming out very soon. My question, I guess, for everybody would be, and maybe Simon, you can weigh in, is you've heard so much about this case from so many different angles. What do you think the surprise is that the retired FBI private investigator said we'll hear? I don't think he was referring to Misty.
I don't think he was either, but I haven't figured out who it is.
I have some ideas, but I do not want to muddy the waters. I would rather focus on the people that are behind bars. That there are at least two people that deserve to be behind bars. We just have to wait and see, you know, if that will transpire.
Well, I certainly hope Peter is right. I would like to see some sooner rather than later some additional action on the Haley piece of the equation, and I certainly hope that's what happens. I don't mean that they should file charges prematurely, charges that aren't going to be able to be prosecuted. But I think if they've got the stuff, I'd like to see it move forward fairly quickly.
I think they were angry. I'm sorry.
No, carry on, Peter.
I think they were angry at the release of information that was stated and worded very, very plainly that these were Haley's bones. And they responded very swiftly because I think they're feeling a lot of pressure. But if you notice the response that was on the Nancy Grace show about the bones was a sentence that is deceptive. The police have tested the bones, and they're not human bones. What that sounds like is, hey, I wasn't wrong. I've just learned the police tested the bones, and they found out they're not human bones. That's not what happened. That's not what happened. That's not at all, but that's what was presented to the public. And as TJ said, it's always sources tell me. And I thought it was 90 phone calls all this time because I've heard it so many times.
Yeah.
I think the Florida anthropologist that was on the scene there likely knew that these were gator bones or deer bones or whatever it was at the time, and they may have played this very well with Misty, but that's not what was communicated to us. That's not, we, the public, did not hear that. And the quote-unquote retraction was deceptive in its wording. But that's no different than saying, we have the secretly recording tapes. We have them. The emphasis is that they're exclusive and they're secretly recorded. They're not exclusives and they're not secretly recorded.
Definitely.
They know they're being recorded.
Right.
That's.
I don't want to get into bashing
get him to stop.
A double Emmy winning journalist, but it was an absolute pile of bullshit. Pure and simple. All right, Jan, your wrap up for today.
Well, I do have some opinions too, but like I said, no, I don't voice my opinion on them very much because I'd really rather keep it to myself because I don't want to accuse anybody that falsely. But I do say this. Everybody says, well, they're all in jail and one way or another, even if they never find Haley or find out the real cause of whatever happened to her. I don't think that that's a fair statement, really, though. I think that the one that did this should be the one to pay for it. I don't think that if they all aren't involved, all of them shouldn't be paying for it. But I want the person that is involved directly to pay for this, and I don't think Haley will get the justice that she deserves unless they do. I mean, they can go to jail for 20 years or... Because, you know, if Misty gets, just for instance, she gets 100 years, she's not going to serve that 100 years. I know the court system better. They get out. They let them out on good behavior nowadays. But if she needs to pay, or not necessarily her, but whoever who did this needs to pay for the crime that they committed.
Okay. We are down to the very last couple of minutes. Peter, I want your final thoughts, and let's wrap this show up, and we'll do it again next week.
I think that Misty has been shown to be deceptive. Ron has been shown to be deceptive. I think Tommy likely failed most of that polygraph, which triggered things off. There's a reason why Ronald has been deceptive. There's a reason why Misty has been deceptive. There's always a reason why someone needs to withhold or deceive others with the information. And I think we're going to find out relatively soon.
I hope so.
Oh, so do I. This is Simon Barrett and my lovely wife, Jan Barrett, wishing everyone a wonderful Sunday. I'm sure we'll be back next Sunday talking about the same subjects. Have a great day.
Thank you all for being here. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.